Radio Netherlands, not national, but international, broadcasting direct from Northwest Europe. Media Network, the weekly communications magazine with Diana Janssen and Jonathan Marks.
Hello, and we start with a short preview of what's coming up in August on this program. Next Thursday, August 3rd, we'll be reviewing the Grundig Yardboy 305, which has just appeared on the shelves here in Europe. And on August 10th, we'll be focusing on the 50th anniversary of Radio Vlaanderen Internationaal, which actually started in Leopoldville during the days of the Belgian Congo.
And there's a historical flavour to the programme on August 17th, when we look at the broadcasting scene in Indonesia back in 1945, part one of a special documentary.
More preview details on our internet pages, http://www.rnw.nl.
Back to the day, and we'll bring up the analogue line to Victor Gunatilaka from Colombo, Sri Lanka. Victor, when we spoke to you last face-to-face at the EDXE conference in Denmark in June, you said that Singapore had stopped using shortwave for its Chinese service, but now it's back.
Well, yes, Jonathan. When I came back, I did check Radio Singapore, and I find them back on the air on 6,000 kilohertz. That's the Chinese service. They sign on at 22 hours and sign off at 16 hours. By the way, the World Radio TV handbook gives all these sign-offs at 18 hours. So this is a change, 22 hours to 16 hours and on 6,000 kilohertz. 6155, the English service, also signs off at 1600 and not 1800 as listed in the handbook.
Now, I understand the BBC has some coverage problems out of Singapore Relay 2.
Well, yes, Jonathan. With the solar activity going down, BBC is having serious problems covering even South Asia from their Singapore Relay station, especially after 16 hours UTC, and that's 9:30 p.m., and this is more or less peak listening time in South Asia. So reception is, however, much better on 3915 kilohertz, right in the tropical band area. That's a 75-meter band, 3915 kilohertz from BBC, from their relay station in Singapore. So high frequencies are really performing very badly these days with the solar activity so down.
Okay, where are we going next?
Well, Radio Veritas is using a new frequency to the large Filipino population in the Middle East, the working population. They have been in the news, of course, and the frequency 11715. And Radio Veritas likes to call the language Filipino, not Tagalog, and their transmission is from 15 hours to 1525, and on weekends they go on to 16 hours UTC. On Sundays, they have Roman Catholic Mass, and then the program is more or less 50% English with the Mass in English and a sermon in English as well. So there have been a lot of demonstrations about Filipino housemaids and workers in Singapore and in the Gulf area. So Radio Veritas started this new service to the Gulf area, and also Radio Filipinas in the meantime. They started using two new frequencies in the 25-meter band, and their service to the Gulf area in Tagalog is from 1730 to 1930 UTC, and the frequency is 11720, 11890, and 15190.
There's also mystery on the air at the moment.
Well, Jonathan, there is a Bangla language Islamic discussion station, and they are discussing extracts from the Holy Quran, and the station is found on 15470 kilohertz, 1330 to 14 hours UTC. The station does not give any station identification. However, they identify the program as Mukti Prabaho and gives the station address in Bangkok, Thailand. Now, this is quite a mystery. Bangladesh, of course, is an Islamic nation, and we just cannot understand why they can't give us an address in Bangladesh itself. The station obviously is coming from a transmitter in the CIS, the sign-on procedure. The transmitter comes on with tuning tones, and the signal is very strong here in South Asia. So that's the Bangla Mystery Station, the frequency 15470, 1330 to 14 hours UTC, giving excellent reception here in South Asia. The station was discovered first by Roman Penkov in Bulgaria, who asked me to check this out while I was in Europe, Jonathan.
Okay, let's have a listen to an extract.
Mukto Prabaho, DPO box number, 1605, Bangkok, 1050.
Well, from that extract, it sounds very strong indeed. What about Radio Afghanistan? Because they're difficult to hear these days.
Oh, yes, sir. It was a very regular station here in South Asia, and we like to listen to it very much. But with all the civil unrest going on in Afghanistan, the station has almost disappeared. The only frequency that we can pick up is 1278 kilohertz on medium wave, and Sarat Virakon managed to hear the station with a good antenna around 14 hours UTC, but the station is soon drowned out by other stations in the Middle East. And according to press reports, there is absolutely no other transmitter active in Kabul. There is no television, there is no electricity, and the only transmitter that comes out of Afghanistan is 1278. I just wonder what the situation for radio listening is out there in Kabul, Jonathan.
Victor, thanks for joining us. Diana.
A few weeks ago, we invited comments about radio documentaries following on from a radio festival held in Amsterdam recently at the Bali. That normally is a theatre, but for one weekend, several rooms were fitted out with tape recorders and hi-fi loudspeakers. More than 100 documentaries from all over the world were played, and more than 400 people turned up to hear them. That's not bad when you realize that it was boiling hot outside. Several international documentary makers came to the festival and were asked on their way in to justify why radio documentaries are important.
In the last few years of the 20th century, I think it is becoming more and more obvious that the world should listen to documentaries, if only because we are surrounded by so much meaningless noise through chat shows, through programs that have no real thought behind them. And all this noise from time to time, I think, stops when there is a documentary which dissects human life, allows about 15 to 20 minutes, 30 minutes, maybe 45 minutes of concentrated thought, creates pictures in the mind, and I think makes us understand human nature much better.
Hearing is a neglected and an abused sense, and radio documentaries, I think, are invigorating, exhilarating, sometimes exacting, sometimes a meditative experience.
Because they're damned exciting.
Well, I think we're assaulted by information in this world, and I think information without meaning is useless.
For instance, now in Sarajevo or Bosnian war, radio was for months and months and months the only mean of communication and information.
The really important thing about radio documentaries is that they try to portray the world in a not black and white fashion. Most media simplifies important matters, but the thing about a documentary is that it tries to show the world as it is, complex, and that's very important.
Good radio documentary feature really doesn't so much describe reality in an objective way, but tries to create and evoke that reality between the listener's ears.
Radio could be just news and music, but it's nice if it could be more than that.
Defining a documentary is a bit difficult these days. It's not a long interview, nor is it a feature with a bit of music. A real documentary consists of one or more stories woven together. To make one, you have to collect lots of pieces of the jigsaw puzzle of sound and make sure they all fit together. If they do, then you have a jewel.
Erik Hogeboom was one of the organizers of the festival.
We actually wanted to have something from abroad bring in to the Netherlands, just to show the Dutch documentary makers and the broader audience what happens outside, because we see marvelous programs, documentaries made in Denmark, Sweden, England, and we want to show them what's happening there and maybe make things better here.
What's gone wrong with the radio documentary then in the Netherlands? Is it that it's disappeared, or it's regarded as only for a very tiny older population?
You can say it disappeared, because maybe at this time there are more documentaries made than ever. But the problem is they are put away on a kind of island, Radio 5, on a medium wave, bad quality. And if you make a documentary, you make it as beautiful as possible.
So full stereo as opposed to mono.
That's one of the basic conditions, that it's full stereo and that the sound is clear and that people can easily find it on their radio. And that's the problem with Radio 5 in the Netherlands now.
Indeed, the lack of a stereo outlet and the rather off-peak timing has led to a growing frustration amongst documentary makers. The Dutch public radio isn't doing enough to tell stories and share opinions longer than 4 minutes or so. There's increasing pressure on radio producers to assemble their programmes as fast as possible and as cheaply. Radio documentaries need time, and there's not much left these days.
We see a kind of devaluation concerning the term documentary in the Netherlands. People call a documentary any program that is longer than 5 minutes, and we want to say, no, it's more a reportage or an interview. A documentary has more, it has different layers, and it has a personal view of the maker, it's a personal story of the maker.
Milling around in the foyer, we bumped into Lucille, one of the many students studying journalism in this country, but one of the few specializing in radio. She remarked that while all the graduates in radio now have a job, many TV journalists find themselves without employment. But why stick to radio?
Because it's easy to make a program. You can do it all by yourself, and that's it's very and it's less expensive. You can do a lot. You can go to wars with just your recorder, and yeah, you can get everywhere.
Talking to others at the festival, we discovered a common word used by program makers: passion. If you really want to tell a story and you use sound to bring the listener with you, the radio can draw you in and involve you much more than television.
It's rather like when a radio series gets transferred to television. The characters you imagined are never the same on the silver screen.
Sometimes I remember more what I hear from radio from a long time ago than what I than programs that I saw on television, because they somehow have a lower impact on me.
Even though television is getting cheaper as the size of broadcast quality camera shrinks, the camera is far more imposing than the simple radio microphone. In many cases, TV documentary makers turn up with three people: the cameraman, the sound engineer, the interviewer, and maybe even someone for the lights. That's in sharp contrast to the intimacy of radio.
The Boundless Sound Festival in Amsterdam succeeded in attracting a lot of young documentary makers and fans of the genre. Normally, you listen to the radio on your own, not with a group of people. Yet we found it was possible to sit in a darkened room and enjoy a programme and then share the experience with someone over a cup of coffee. You then realise that you experienced something different from the other listener, even though you were both listening to the same programme.
Radio Netherlands has a tradition of documentary making in English and Spanish. A Dutch language documentary workshop has now been formed in order to further strengthen the tradition and hopefully stimulate our domestic service colleagues that the radio documentary shouldn't simply disappear into the ether. The foreign makers were emphatic that radio documentaries should continue.
Yes, yes. And if we needed evidence of it, then we have it here in Amsterdam this weekend, which has been so far very, very positive, very exciting, optimistic, but not unrealistic.
For me, the Boundless Sound Festival has been a wonderful, free and freeing experience. I like very much the way that it seems to be very casual. It's not set up in a great mausoleum, a big hotel or anything like that. It's in a place a working space. It's full of accidents in the nicest sense. At the same time, it's very precise, so that we center on certain programs and we have groups of people who make particular points from their point of view. So I like this double thing, that it's very free and it's very centered.
Some of the views from the documentary festival Boundless Sound. And Jonathan, a note from the program, the remarkable role that radio documentaries continue to make in former Yugoslavia. Some of the programs made in Bosnia, especially with the children of the war there, are very, very moving indeed.
I agree. A decision will be taken in September as to the future of the festival. Meantime, we're getting a lot of reaction to our simple question as to whether some of the documentary features in Media Network, like Wartime Deception, or even that Radio Luxembourg flashback at the end of June, should be released on compact disc. Marianne Kehoe sums up the sentiments of many people who called or wrote in.
There's been programs I've listened to that I would like to hear again and keep on cassette form. I've got a collection of cassettes that go back to 1971, and I would be, you know, devastated if I ever lost that, because that represents almost 21 years of shortwave listening. Talk to y'all soon. Have a great summer. Bye-bye.
Now to a group that hopes shortwave will disappear as soon as possible. The MPEG gang is here. It's impossible for me to predict what that piece of music sounds like at the point where you're listening to at the moment. It could sound like real hi-fi if you're listening to us on FM or via satellite. It could be full of fading and sound a bit like Edison's first experiments with the phonograph if you're listening on shortwave. But across Europe at the moment, several laboratories are working to try and squeeze more audio into a smaller space without hearing the difference. Philips DCC, the digital compact cassette, and the Sony Minidisc system are examples of this. In fact, the system doesn't record everything the microphone picks up, but only what the ear will detect when the recording is played back. If a loud noise masks a quieter one, then the quiet sound isn't recorded. Of course, it's important that there are international standards for this technique, and these have been set by the so-called Motion Picture Experts Group, or MPEG. All this is very important for the development of digital audio broadcasting. Later this year, the Funkausstellung in Berlin, Radio France International, BBC World Service, Deutsche Welle and Radio Netherlands hope to demonstrate how three international radio broadcasts can be squeezed into one DAB channel. Very important if international radio is going to compete in the long term when medium wave loses its popularity. Harald Propp is senior engineer at the Fraunhofer Institute for Integrated Circuits in Erlangen, Germany, where they compress and decompress audio all day long in the hope of getting an even better sound out of a lower bitrate.
The MPEG audio standard has three layers. They are called layer 1, layer 2, layer 3. Layer 2 is also well known as Musicam. Layer 3 combines schemes like Musicam and ASPEC to another coding scheme. So we have, in fact, three layers, and we have them in the standard since 92, since it was finished. These three layers aim at different applications. So layer 1 is a very simple, very low complexity. It's a reduction factor of around 4. It's used at a Philips DCC recorder. That's where it's used mainly. Layer 2 has a higher complexity, is used for digital audio broadcasting at high bit rates, 256, 192. And so it's good for a reduction of 6 to 8. And layer 3 has a bit higher complexity and is good, therefore, for a reduction factor of 10 to 12 or even more.
So what's the Fraunhofer Institute doing?
Well, we developed layer 3. That's what we did.
And what will it turn into? It'll turn into, presumably, chips then, which will appear eventually in radios if it goes ahead.
Okay, Fraunhofer does applied research, so we always do the things the customers want from us. We started with source coding in the Eureka project, in the digital audio broadcasting, and developed MPEG audio layer 3 ultimately. Now we're doing a lot of things for industrial clients, putting layer 3 into real-life implementations for certain systems.
When will MPEG 3 be used, or is it already being used, in fact, in consumer products?
All of these MPEG audio things are relatively brand new. So the first market that appeared was the professional applications, and there we have layer 2 and layer 3 as well. for the consumer side, we have the DCC only at the moment. Now, for new things that are arising, there is already a layer 3 chip also available, and yes, it's here for mass applications. Digital video broadcasting will come perhaps in pilot projects this year, and so we will see the advent of various MPEG audio schemes year by year now.
As time goes by, scientists are able to squeeze more and more audio quality into smaller and smaller bandwidths. That's important because if you're trying to get an audio signal from one side of the planet to another, you pay for the bandwidth that you use. But can it go any further, or are we starting to reach the physical limit?
There's still certainly room left to squeeze it more. But this question has been put to us since, I say, 87. How far can you go? And the answer is always a bit unclear, because you can't simulate it. You have to study and to experiment and do a lot of research work. And so many, many man years are already spent for that was what we have reached now.
But certainly on 64K, you're able to provide now stereo, let's say, FM-like quality almost.
Yes, with a bit reduced bandwidth, so it's around 10 kilohertz, but it might be very useful for many applications, right?
Digital audio broadcasting being one of them. I was talking there to Harold Prom.
While other stations are just giving out statistics, we're playing daft jingles to remind you that you're listening to Radio Netherlands. Thank you.
Back to the phone, Hilversum 6724 222.
Hello, Jonathan. This is Alex James calling from Bishop's Stortford, Hertfordshire in the UK. I wondered if you know of any radio stations which do their schedule on disk, on computer disk. Because I fit in a bit of DXing when I'm not at school, and I find it hard to keep up to date with what's happening on shortwave. Also, I'm a blind listener, and I don't know of any schedules which are in Braille or on tape, but I can use computer disk information through a voice synthesizer. So please could you mention any stations which do their schedule on disk, or for that matter, if there are any which do their schedules in Braille or on tape?
And that ties in with a query from Julian Simon, who also asks if there are stations that supply their program schedule in Braille or on tape.
It sounds logical because radio is very important to the visually handicapped. Arthur Cushion has done a lot of work for blind listeners in New Zealand. He's on the line now. Arthur, I seem to recall that Ian McFarland used to read the schedule of Radio Canada International onto a cassette twice a year, but that service stopped when he left the station. We're not in a position to do it ourselves here at Radio Netherlands, at least just yet, but it is a valuable suggestion. Arthur, what about others?
No, there's no one supplying that, but it is available through the Ontario DX Association in Toronto. They have an excellent audio service, and ODXA magazine is read every month by Joe Robinson, who's their president, and it consists of two 60-minute cassettes, and it's the highlights of their 96-page magazine. And that includes a lot of schedules and latest news on what's being heard by their members on medium and shortwave.
Thanks, and so going back to the service for blind listeners that Arthur just mentioned, the address for further information is the Ontario DX Association, P.O. Box 161, Station A, Willowdale, that's Willowdale, Ontario, and the postal code M2N5S8 in Canada. That's the Ontario DX Association, P.O. Box 161, Station A, Willowdale, Ontario, M2N5S8 in Canada. And please enclose return postage.
Radio Netherlands, another detour on the path to self-improvement.
Back to the bands now. Chris Greenway from BBC Monitoring is on the line with a follow-up to the cutbacks we mentioned recently affecting Lithuania's external service.
That's right. These cuts took effect on the 3rd of July, and as far as listeners outside Lithuania are concerned, the main effect was that 9710 kilohertz was going to go off the air completely, which would mean the end of all shortwave broadcasting from Lithuania itself. However, only just over a week later, on the 11th of July, we picked up a report from the radio which said that as a result of complaints and indeed pressure from the Prime Minister of Lithuania, they were going to reverse these cuts, which had affected not just 9710, but also some relays on medium wave of the domestic services. It appears that outside the main towns in the countryside of Lithuania, the ownership of VHF sets is really quite limited. And as some broadcasts were only being made on VHF, a lot of people had lost access to them. So these cuts were being reversed from that date. And so from 11th of July, 9710 kilohertz has come back on the air, which means that, for example, listeners in the rest of Europe can now hear the domestic service of Lithuanian radio on 9710. And we can also hear their external service, Radio Vilnius, in the evening, which is on that frequency. There are broadcasts in English at 1900 and again at 2130 on 9710 and also on three medium wave channels, 1557, 666 and 612 kilohertz. Perhaps a bit further afield than Europe, they broadcast to the Americas at 2300 GMT, that's in English, and the frequency there is 9530, though we have had an announcement that that will change to 7360 from the 1st of August.
Well, at least some good news about Radio Vilnius. You also have some news about Hungary.
Yes, interesting situation in Hungary, quite similar to Lithuania, in that the main state broadcaster there, Hungarian Radio, has been obliged, because of financial problems, to cut back a little bit on its medium-wave broadcasts. And they've announced that from the 1st of August, they'll be making some reductions in their broadcasting, one of which is that their main medium-wave transmitter on 540 kilohertz, which in fact normally broadcasts with a power of 2 megawatts, will be cut down to half power. Now, this has actually prompted quite a few people to complain about this, but I'm just wondering if these people who are complaining have really realized what this means. I mean, still, 1 megawatt on medium wave is still extremely powerful, and Hungary, not really being a huge country, I'm sure that still with 1 megawatt, the signal on 540 kilohertz will cover the country perfectly adequately and indeed get further afield as well.
Chris Greenway on the line from the UK. We've had reaction to last week's changes to Radio Netherlands homepages on the internet. We hope to post the new winter programme schedule before September the 1st. If you want the printed version, then do drop us a line now to register in time. We've been sensitive to people who said they prefer an electronic edition in order to save paper. We've also had some requests to post the details of our Astra audio subcarriers, and we're working on that too. Talking of Astra, here's another guest.
Now, news from the World Radio TV Handbook editorial office in Amsterdam. Here's Andy Sennett.
And I'd just like to add that if you live in the area covered by the Astra satellite, you can enjoy some wonderful TV programs from Mexico, unscrambled and absolutely free. Televisión is the station. It's on transponder 44, which is 11.126 gigahertz, vertically polarized. And on Sunday evenings between 19 and 22 hours UTC, there's a fabulous three-hour musical spectacular called Siempre and Domingo, which features all types of music from traditional to pop hits, not only from Mexico, but from all over Latin America.
And you also have a bit of radio news from Mexico.
I do indeed. According to a report on the internet spotted by DX'er Dawn Moore, it appears that Radio Huayacocotla is back on the air again after having been closed down by the authorities more than a month ago. The report mentions the frequency as 2380 kHz, but Don thinks this is probably a typo for 2390, their usual frequency. In WRTH 95, we give the operating times of this 800-watt station as 12 to 15 hours UTC and 21 to 01 hours UTC.
And next, some details of a special broadcast coming up in August.
Well, we've just had a press release from American shortwave station WWCR, and they're planning to rebroadcast several World War II radio programs. The first one is a typical Glenn Miller show, and it'll be aired on Saturday, August the 5th, at 06 hours UTC on 7435 kHz, 7435, at 14 hours UTC on 15685 kHz, 15685, and 22 hours UTC on 12160 kHz, 12160. Well, that piece of music you heard there isn't the original, but if you want to hear what it sounded like back then note the date, Saturday, August the 5th.
Now, Mike Bird with his big-time propagation survey.
The solar flux dropped and the geomagnetic field was disturbed on Monday. Solar activity was low all week. The solar flux was 71 at the beginning of the week. On Sunday, it dropped to 68, and by Tuesday, it had risen to 70. The average works out to 69.4, which equals a sunspot number of 3, and that is down 7 points on the previous week's level. The geomagnetic field disturbance indicator, the estimated planetary A index, ranged between 5 and 28, which represents quiet to active conditions. The magnetic field was generally quiet to unsettled until 6 hours UTC on Monday, when it became stormy for a few hours. On Tuesday, the magnetic field quietened, but the ionosphere became severely depressed in many regions of the world between 0 and 5 hours UTC.
And what about between now and next Thursday, August the 3rd?
IPS Radio and Space Services expect solar activity will remain very low. The geomagnetic field is expected to be active today and then hopefully quiet to unsettled for the remainder of the week.
Thanks, Mike. And that's all for now.
In 7 days, we take you to Darkest Earbeg to visit London on a train. Sounds like rubbish, but it isn't.
In the meantime, have a sunny weekend.
Media Network. Produced and presented by Jonathan Marks and Diana Janssen for Radio Netherlands, the Dutch.